Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up!
Canelo versus Golovkin will undoubtedly be boxing's best fight in 2017. With the most action, the most intensity, and the most on the line for both fighters.
That's Oscar De La Hoya, the former world and Olympic champion boxer who is now a promoter, hyping Canelo versus Golovkin in the British capital, London. Mexico's Saul Canelo Alvarez will meet Kazakhstan's Gennady Triple G Golovkin in an eagerly awaited World Middleweight Championship fight on September 16th in Las Vegas, Nevada. And their international promotional tour is now underway. In London, Triple G talked about his international experience as well as Canelo's Mexican background.
I have experience. It's world experience, American experience, Soviet Union experience, Kazakh experience, UK experience, you know. Mexican style, yeah, my trainer, he's from Mexico. Mexican style, this is like a bonus, like an extra. Canelo, he's original from Mexico, you know. He has the same team, he's Mexican. He had a lot of experience from different boxers. This Mexican style, this is bonus, this is big gift for people, you know, like an extra. You know, boxing is boxing. If you have Mexican experience, this is different, like a first class, like a true warrior, true fight. Not dancing, you know, not show, just fight. This experience, bonus to fight.
Gennady Golovkin has won all 37 of his prize fights, 33 of them by knockout. Canelo's professional record is 49 wins, 1 loss, and 1 draw with 34 knockouts. Canelo's only loss came in 2013 when he lost a majority decision to American star Floyd Mayweather Jr. The 40-year-old Mayweather recently announced he's coming out of retirement to take on Irish mixed martial arts fighter Conor McGregor on August 26th in Las Vegas, 3 weeks before Canelo versus Golovkin. In London, British boxing promoter Frank Warren compared the Mayweather-McGregor fight with the Canelo-Golovkin bout.
The difference between those two, these guys are both proven boxers, and they're the best out there. Floyd Mayweather is by far the best fighter of his generation, pound for pound, whatever you want to call it. He's the best fighter. Conor McGregor has never fought. I don't know whether he can box or not. Who knows? I don't know. So what you've got a situation where Conor McGregor's the best guy in the UFC, and you've got Floyd, who's, as I said, is the best of his generation. So you're going to find out who it is. I mean, I've got my views who it's going to be, but you're going to find out. These guys are tried and tested as boxers. With Conor McGregor and Floyd, only one of them is.
British boxing promoter Frank Warren speaking in London. I asked our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Mueta, with these two big fights only a few weeks apart in Las Vegas, what financial impact will the Mayweather-McGregor bout have on the Canelo-Golovkin fight?
Well, it depends on the outcome of the Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight. If that fight just becomes a one-sided, boring fight and Mayweather goes there and knocks out McGregor, people will feel ripped off. It may not affect the Canelo fight because the boxing purists said already, forget this Conor McGregor-Mayweather fiasco because that's not boxing. I don't really think it's going to affect Canelo Triple G fight, because that is the fight fans have been talking about for years, and that fight is going to happen. Papers are signed. It should not.
Tactically, Namdi, how do you see Canelo Triple G?
Canelo will have to back up Triple G, establish his power, establish his big monster right hand. Let Triple G know that you cannot go toe-to-toe with me. Break Triple G down with the body shots. And he can do it. What we call barbecue, stay in the ribs, you know. Why did you think Chavez was just unable to do anything, you know? And Canelo can do it. Canelo is young. Canelo is strong. Canelo, this fight right there, I may even put my crib on Canelo, Sonny.
Thanks, Namdi. Put your crib on Canelo. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moueta.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa, a preview of the Kenyan presidential election. The race between incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta and Raila Odinga. The main opposition candidate is looking increasingly competitive. A discussion on Kenya's presidential election on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here.
The Voice of America. VOA.
More boxing news on the VOA. The Australian Jeff Horn says he's in his final stages of training for his July 2nd WBO welterweight title fight against Filipino star Manny Pacquiao in Brisbane.
I'm right smack bang in the middle of hard training. I've only got another 4 or 5 days left of real hard stuff to go. One more hard sparring session with Cesar Amonsot. I'm looking forward to that being over, to be honest, and just tapering off for the fight. I'm starting to get to that stage where I'm anxious and ready to just get in there and get the job done.
Jeff Horn spoke in his birthplace of Brisbane, where he'll fight Manny Pacquiao at the Suncor Stadium in what's being described as the highest profile boxing match ever held on Australian soil. Over the years on our Voice of America airwaves, Namdi Moueta has talked about more than a few controversial decisions in professional boxing. One of the latest came 4 days ago in Las Vegas. World light heavyweight champion Andre Ward of the United States successfully defended his titles with an 8th-round technical knockout in a rematch against the Russian Sergey Kovalev. Kovalev complained about several low blows by Ward, including a few at the end of the fight, right before American referee Tony Weeks stopped the bout. Kovalev's promoter, Kathy Duva, said she'll officially protest the decision with the Nevada State Athletic Commission.
They're playing back.
The National Basketball Association will hold its annual draft of college and international players on Thursday night in New York City. The draft will be held at Barclays Center Arena in Brooklyn, the home of the NBA's Brooklyn Nets Club. The Boston Celtics originally had the first pick in the draft, thanks to a trade they made with the Brooklyn Nets a few years ago. But earlier this week, the Celtics traded their number one pick to the Philadelphia 76ers. In return, the Celtics get the number three pick along with future draft considerations. So, Philadelphia will pick number 1, the Los Angeles Lakers will pick number 2, and the Celtics will pick number 3. One of the African players attracting interest from NBA clubs ahead of the draft is Peter Jok, a 23-year-old shooting guard who was born in Khartoum, Sudan. Peter is 6 feet 6 inches tall, or 1.98 meters in height, and he played 4 years for the University of Iowa Hawkeyes. In his senior season, Jok earned all-conference honors and led the Big Ten Conference in scoring, averaging almost 20 points each game. Ahead of Thursday night's NBA draft, Peter worked out for more than a dozen NBA clubs, including the one based here in Washington, the Washington Wizards. After that training session, Peter Jok talked about what skills he can bring to an NBA team.
I mean, I can shoot with the best of them. Also, I can be a playmaker and get other guys' shots. And obviously, defense, too. I feel like I can play both two-way, be a two-way player, knock down shots, and then guard on defense. So I feel like my shooting is going to translate the most in my game, so to the NBA.
Peter Jok adds, while he improved as a player at the University of Iowa, he's nowhere near a finished product.
My game grew a lot since I've been in college. Going from freshman, sophomore year, where I was just a catch and shoot guy, to my junior and senior year, where I was being a playmaker, creating my own shots, and leading the Big Ten in scoring. So, I mean, it's a long way. I still got a lot of potential. I feel like my game hasn't peaked yet. And for next level to be in the right system and the right development, and I feel like my game's going to keep getting better and better.
That Sudanese basketball player Peter Jok speaking here in Washington and hoping to be selected in Thursday night's NBA draft in New York.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA newsfeeds. VOAnews.com. VOA!
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOAsunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOAsunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America.
Our Voice of America listeners can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is @VOAsunnySports. Brazilian football great Pelé is also on Twitter. His official handle is simply @Pelé. Now 76 years old, Pelé is regarded by many as the greatest football player of all time. Pelé remains the only player in history to lift the World Cup trophy 3 times in 1958, 1962, and 1970. Pelé's most recent tweet reads, "I'm on my way to Russia for the FIFA Confederations Cup tournament. Hope to see you there." in Moscow, Pele said he would love to see a 2018 World Cup final between Brazil and Russia.
Listen, I used to say the football all over the world, they have some chance. You know, like Brazil, we have a little problem. Argentina have some problem. You know, the chance of the players. And then the Russian football almost the same. But I think most important is to be well for the next World Cup. Then we have a Brazil and Russia. We have at least 1 year from now to prepare a nice team to play in the final. Then I want to come here to see Brazil and Russia in the final.
Brazilian football great Pele speaking in Moscow, Russia. Now let's go to Tokyo, Japan, where five-time Super Bowl champion Tom Brady of the New England Patriots wrapped up an Asia tour Wednesday to promote the sportswear brand Under Armour and American-style football.
In order for a Japanese player to excel, they're going to need to work very hard and committed, just like, you know, the American players. I mean, the more the game grows and the more people can play and participate in activities like this, you know, you need to be able to watch the game and learn about the game and then ultimately go out and practice and play. But they certainly have all the talent and the ability to do that.
Tom Brady held an American football clinic for Japanese players in Tokyo, as well as similar clinics for Chinese players during earlier stops in Beijing and Shanghai. Tom Brady said it was his dream to play a National Football League game in China. Meanwhile, while in Tokyo on Wednesday, the 39-year-old Brady talked with Japanese reporters about his career.
Every year has its different challenges. I never thought growing up that I would be a professional player. I always had dreams. But to have the opportunity to keep playing, you know, is still something that I love to do. So it takes a lot of, you know, perseverance. It takes a lot of, you know, internal drive. But it also takes so much support from teammates in order to accomplish that. So in such a great country like this, to show the commitment, but also the teamwork by all the players was very special for me to see.
That's Tom Brady, the star quarterback for the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. And Brady was speaking Wednesday in Tokyo, Japan. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. I know many of those faithful New England Patriots fans would like to maybe ordain Tom Brady for sainthood. And you kind of have a tie-in tonight, Andrew, I understand. At the Vatican.
Yes, it's going to, if they want to anoint Tom Brady, that's going to have to go through the Pope. And I don't know how he feels about that, but we do know how he feels about American football because members of the American Pro Football Hall of Fame met with Pope Francis at the Vatican this week. So lots of activity there. The Pro Football Hall of Fame Twitter account had reaction from some of the players who got to make that trip, including four-time Super Bowl winner Ronnie Lott, who he said the Pope set an example of how to have peace in our lives. He said, we're great competitors, but he was a great competitor at showing us peace today. Mm. So some nice words from Ronnie Lott there. The Pope was presented with a jersey with a number one on the back, and it said Papa Francisco, where the name would be kind of across the shoulders on the back of the jersey. The Pope joked that the American football that those players are in the Hall of Fame for, and his style of football, also known as soccer, a little bit different between the two. Of course, the Pope is from Argentina, so quite a soccer tradition in that country. But the Washington Post, I think, summed it up best. They said that this is the summer of American football for Pope Francis. Not only did he have this meeting with the Hall of Famers, he met with the University of Michigan football team earlier this year. So a lot of American football teams, a lot of American football players going to meet the Pope. And an American football owner, Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys, was among those there to meet the Pope this week. Lots of jokes on social media about Jerry Jones and what he asked the Pope for and what he talked to the Pope about. A lot of jokes about maybe some divine intervention for the Dallas Cowboys defense. please, you know, praying for them to win a Super Bowl. And also a lot of jokes about, you know, Hail Mary passes. Of course, when you chuck the ball down the field in the last seconds trying to score, it's called a Hail Mary. So a lot of jokes about that on social media as well.
Interesting, Andrew. We heard from Tom Brady in Asia this week on kind of a ambassadorial tour for the National Football League. We have these players at the Vatican. I kind of get this sense maybe the NFL wants to expand overseas.
Oh, definitely. I think that's something they've been looking at doing, certainly for years in London, in Mexico City, where they've had games pretty consistently in those cities. I think that if they could put a team overseas and make it really a global sports league, they would absolutely do that. So we'll see if it ends up, whether it's in Asia or whether it's in, I don't know if the Vatican is going to get a team necessarily, but maybe you know, somewhere in Europe where the Pope can cheer for that team. We'll see.
I guess it can't hurt to get a papal blessing as they maybe expand.
And that's another one of the jokes. You know, Jerry Jones will take any kind of blessing he can get for those Dallas Cowboys. Have not done all that well in the postseason in recent years.
What else is trending on this Wednesday, Andrew?
Well, another football story, but a little more serious note. Hall of Famer Warren Sapp, he's a Super Bowl champion, seven-time Pro Bowler. He's announced that he's going to donate his brain to science after he passes away to study the effects of chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. This is something that's been talked about quite a lot in American football with all those hits that the players take and concussions that they receive. This disorder, CTE, has developed in a lot of these players. It causes memory loss. It causes depression. It's caused some of the players to commit suicide and some other neurological disorders. So Warren Sapp announcing this on the Players Tribune, which is, of course, that website founded by Derek Jeter, where athletes are contributors. And he, after writing this article on the Players Tribune, put up a video on social media where he says the whole thing started when he got an email from a friend of his, Fred Willis, who's a retired NFL player who had worked to shed light on CTE. And when Fred Willis sent that email to Sapp, it had all these quotes from different NFL owners saying, oh, there's no connection between getting hit in the head and all these terrible things that are happening to former players. And so Sapp said that was the moment he realized he wanted to donate his brain and do some good. And he said that when he started playing football, the only thing he wanted to do was leave the game better than when he started. And this is his way of doing that. So a lot of fans praising him on social media for making this decision, saying that hopefully it'll help younger generations to stave off or avoid some of these traumatic brain injuries and the consequences of those. And a lot of fans saying Warren Sapp hopefully has many years yet to live, so this will not be for a very long time into the future. He's still a very young guy. I think he's in his 40s, so still very young, not anytime soon, hopefully, that he'll be passing away. But he did note in this video that he has had some memory loss. He has some issues going since his playing career ended. So some unfortunate news there, but a very brave and courageous move for him to donate his brain.
Nice move there by Warren Sapp. What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, unfortunately, we end on a sad note today. Tony DiCicco is the former U.S. Women's National Soccer Team coach, died at the age of 68 this week after battling cancer. He led the U.S. women's team to the 1996 Olympic gold medal in the first ever women's Olympic soccer tournament. And, of course, the 1999 Women's World Cup held here in the U.S. So we saw a lot of tributes on social media from around the sports and soccer world. Brandi Chastain, known for her World Cup winning shootout goal in 1999, she wrote on social media, "Thank you, Coach. D. Anthony, Drew, and Nick, I love you all." That's Coach DiCicco's family. "Your willingness to share your life with the U.S. Women's National Team filled me with gratitude and humility and joy." And she put up a nice picture of her with the coach. The U.S. Women's National Team tweeting out that he was a pioneer, a champion, a legend. R.I.P. Tony DiCicco. "The sport is forever grateful. We are forever grateful. Thank you." And then soccer commentator and former player Alexi Lalas just writes, American soccer lost a true original." So a lot of words for condolences and a lot of remembrances. It was really the golden time for U.S. women's soccer, winning that gold medal, winning that World Cup. I remember it was the cover of all the magazines, all the newspapers. So really a great time for women's soccer here in the U.S., and he will be very much missed.
Rest in peace, Tony DiCicco. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the June 21st edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Patrick Dea. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports. I
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
One of the world's most promising and, in terms of economy, fastest-growing regions, sub-Saharan Africa, is under attack by transnational criminal networks. Corruption is one of their major weapons. Corruption is an abuse of power at every level that impacts rich and poor countries alike in both the private and public sectors. Corruption destroys trust, undermines development, and erodes confidence in democratic institutions. It distorts markets, causes higher prices, discourages investors, and stunts economic growth. And it is particularly destructive to communities in developing countries, where it blocks development and progress. As the criminal networks see it, you must spend money to make money, and that goes double for corruption. And transnational crime is tremendously lucrative, accounting for 8% to 15% of the world gross domestic product. Hundreds of millions of dollars every year enable criminals and other threat networks to corrupt the regional economies and the global financial system, said Senior Director for National Security and Diplomacy Anti-Crime Programs at the State Department's Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, David Luna.
The proceeds of drug trafficking and other forms of illicit trafficking are fueling a dramatic increase in corruption among the very institution responsible for fighting crime. The collusion and complicity of some government officials with criminal networks have helped to carve out an illicit trafficking corridor that stretches from West Africa coast to the Horn of Africa, from North Africa south to the Gulf of Guinea.
Across these illicit routes, bad actors and networks are corrupting critical institutions and enforcement systems that endanger everyone's security, said David Luna. The United States is determined, in cooperation with our partners in Africa, to disrupt and dismantle transnational organized crime networks. In support of President Donald Trump's executive order on transnational criminal organizations, the United States will continue to assist our partners to strengthen their capabilities to combat today's threat networks, said Mr. Luna. We must crack down on corruption at all levels and cut off the ability of kleptocrats, criminals, and terrorists to enjoy the fruits of illicit enterprise and that enable the financial capacity to execute their operations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa, a preview of the Kenyan presidential election. The race between incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta and Raila Odinga. The main opposition candidate is looking increasingly competitive. A discussion on Kenya's presidential election on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
The Voice of America, VOA.